Hey, can we do the time machine at some point?
Yeah, I like that movie. Isn't that Guy Ritchie?
Yes, it is Guy Ritchie.
Right?
Guy Ritchie didn't direct that.
No.
No, wasn't he the actor?
Oh.
Guy Pearce, is that who I'm thinking of?
Oh, I was like, oh,
sorry,
yeah.
I got my guys mixed
you
up.
You said Guy Ritchie, and I just heard, like, I knew who you meant.
Yes, thank you.
I knew you meant Guy Pearce.
Thank you.
I was like, yes, it is that person.
Yeah. You were connecting to the spirit of the words, not the words themselves.
You were speaking your own language for a second. I would love to see Guy Ritchie.
Get the lads.
Can you imagine? He's somehow both a mad scientist, but also a small-time crook.
Him and his cockney crew. Time.
What do you mean this machine travels through time?
Wait, you talked on your ass.
I'm going to get cast immediately.
What do you mean?
I mean, of course he's going to...
Why Do We Watch This? A podcast where we watch a bad movie, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and make a theme cocktail to go along with it, and then try to fix the movie in something of that order. But we're not doing it this week. This week we're doing a mini-episode. 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing that. But for this week, I'm Brendan Drischler.
I'm Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Revelle.
And we have our windows open. It's a balmy 70-some degrees.
Yeah, ish.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
It has not been pleasant.
Anyway, so this is where we just sit and talk about the weather.
The most interesting topic three people can talk about on a podcast.
It really is.
Put on some mint juleps. It's great.
Yes. The other thing that we talk about is, as I said, we talk about a bad movie. And next, well, 2 weeks from now, we are doing a little bit of something different when it comes to a bad movie. We're doing the 2012 Bollywood movie, Teri Meri Kahani.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's, I chose what I wanted to be for our inaugural, and perhaps only, who knows? Bollywood episode.
I do think we should at some point look at more foreign film.
Me too.
Absolutely.
I think we should open it up.
Yeah. Anyhow, sorry. Go on.
But yeah, so I chose this one because it has some great A stars. It has Priyanka Chopra, who's made it here in the U.S. Pretty big with Quantico. She got canceled, but she's great, and she's a huge star in India, as is the male lead, Shahid Kapoor. And they've both separately done some really amazing work, and they're great actors, but this movie has a strange structure and some weird writing choices.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically meant to be like three love stories across different times. And the main, it's told like, instead of it being like interlaced, it is basically told like one at a time, but not in chronological order.
Well, no, but then at the end, it's like,
but then
and
at the end,
it montages a conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like story one, story two, or really being chronologically, it's like story two, story three,
story one, all
and
the
then,
endings.
And a very sudden rushed ending where it's all like back interlacing all three of them.
Except, you know, while the quality may differ storyline to storyline, the people stay beautiful in this movie.
Some beautiful people. I think the music is in the soundtrack is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously your taste may vary if you're not into Indian music in general, but it got good. The soundtrack got way better reviews than the movie. And I tend to agree that the songs and the production value of the actual, like, how they are in the film are really well done.
There's one song, though, I'm going to lay into with both barrels, and it's the...
The
texting song.
And we'll get into that 2 weeks from now, whenever we actually discuss the movie. The other thing we will have, as we discuss Teri Meri Kahani, is a drink to go along with it, of course! And the drink is called the Tamarind Dill Light. There's a pun in there, if you speak Hindi. Yeah.
Dill means heart,
and the Hindi word for heart,
which is appropriate for a romantic movie. So you know, delight.
The drink itself involves half cup of vodka, a tablespoon of sugar, 6 tablespoons of water, 4 tablespoons of lime juice, 2 teaspoons of tamarind concentrate, orange slices, and papaya slices. And basically, you're mixing everything together until it's all, you know, dissolved and dispersed. And you're going to throw in the orange papaya slices and pour it over some crushed ice.
Mm.
So hopefully it's going to be nice and cool whenever we watch this. It's probably going to be a little bit hotter this weekend. We'll have to see how miserable we are when we record it.
I'm looking forward to it. I think the drink sounds really tasty.
I do think the drink will be good, so we've got that going for us.
Yeah.
Having done all the business that we have to deal with before we go into it, let's go into our topic of discussion for this mini-episode. Lee, this was actually your idea.
Yeah.
We're all,
You're really the mini-discussion idea
editor?
Machine. Yeah. Like, you're just giving them to us.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot of things I want to talk
about. We're in, like, about mid-July at this point. We're nearing, you know, we're getting closer to the premiere of Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Oh, man.
And I could not be more excited to see this fucking piece of garbage in the theaters.
I almost want you to, like, I almost want you to re-recite the title and be like, Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Well, it always reminds me, there's an episode of The Simpsons, I'm blanking on the title of it right now, but at the end, Grandpa drives up on a motorcycle and says, I'm hauling ass to Lollapalooza, and all the like the family members go, here we go again, except for Marge, who just very defeatedly goes, here we go again. Which I think of whenever I hear the title. Sideshow Bob's Less Gleaming, that's the name of the episode. Anyway, So we decided to talk about shameless sequels in the episode.
Just the most bonanza sequels.
So,
cash grabs,
just,
crazy, nutso ones.
Just to sort of throw out some, like, what we're basing this kind of off of. There are, of course, many bad sequels. Like, that's nothing new. What we're dealing with more here is a sequel where, say, as in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, one of the lead actors really didn't want to show up for much of the shoot. So they said, well, I'll be there for a week. You do what you have to do, and then I'm leaving.
So I believe that's the case, but do we know that? Is that, like, do we know that for sure, that she was just not interested in being around?
She did all her scenes in 1 week.
Oh, my God.
I also know, as... You know, spoilers about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
I've heard, like, I talked to one of my co-workers today about this, and she knew this, and she's not, like,
perturbed.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
So I don't know how wide it's gone, but I feel like it may have gotten wider than we thought it did.
I think the trailer
goes out of its way to never show Meryl Streep except in scenes from the first movie.
Yeah,
yes.
It's suspiciously absent, her presence.
Yeah, and they're all like, oh, like, if my mom was here, and I miss my mom so much, and all that sort of crap.
Well,
yeah.
I took that between that and Cher showing up as a grandmother, which is its own issue. We can get into that.
That is insane.
That's the best kind of surprise.
Oh, God.
Damn me if they are not the same age, her and Meryl Streep.
She's like, what, 9 years
older
or something? Yeah, it's like,
it's
such a small amount.
But I thought I saw a trailer between the comments about Wish My Mom Was Here and Grandma showing up that it was a funeral.
So anyway.
Let's just become Mamma Mia.
Yeah, let's just... we'll save for a later episode.
Hold up. I'm just going to put...
I cannot imagine we are done talking about this.
I cannot imagine we'll ever be done talking about Mamma Mia. Here we go again.
We will all die at the same time once we've concluded our discussion about it. But I'm wondering, is it worth it to do in a mini of, like, guys who saw Mamma Mia? Let's...
I mean, you guys did it for La La Land, so I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
So anyways... We're talking about shameless sequels here. As we said, it's perhaps a sequel where one of the lead, or like many of the leads, just did not want to show up for that sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Ones where perhaps we no longer had the budget we once had, but we still want to milk this audience for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or a sequel where you would watch the first one and say, how could you possibly make a sequel to this movie? The story would not permit such a thing to exist.
Yeah.
And yet, nonetheless, we did.
I wanted to also include, because we're talking, that is, I think, like, nails the shameless definition, but I also wanted to talk about ones that just went in a crazy banana
departure.
Okay. So where do we want to... Do you want to start with crazy bonkers?
Yeah, I want to...
Okay.
So I want to start with the bonkers stuff, because Mamma Mia 2 is already going there a little bit.
Right, Mamma Mia 2 is also going... So I have four categories on my phone, and one of those categories
it.
Is the actor won't come back. Mamma Mia 2 also falls into that. It also falls under, frankly, musicals never have sequels, which is another category.
Yeah.
So really, hang on, I want to see maybe this is hitting, like, every single... on. Man, if it hit, like, all five of those categories...
What if people started having sequels, like, that we just had to deal with that?
So here's the thing.
I would hate that.
There have been a handful of music, like, on stage. There have been attempts to make sequels to Annie. And there is a reason why you've never heard of the sequels to Annie.
Does Annie become the philanthropist in adopting it?
She becomes Miss Hannigan. She becomes her own.
What?
Whoa!
Okay with that. No, it's the dumbest.
That would be actually kind of amazing.
There is a sequel called Annie 2 where Miss Hannigan gets out of jail for some reason and masquerades as a woman who wants to marry Daddy Warbucks. It's like Contrivance after Contrivance.
Yeah.
And then it molted and became a sequel called Annie Warbucks where this woman shows up and is like, you can't adopt an orphan without marrying a wife. And it's just like, that is the entire premise of the musical.
Is the first Miss Hannigan driven one also played by Cameron Diaz?
Yes, it was. It was written in the 80s, but it was performed by Cameron Diaz when she was about 16 years old.
The only other musical sequel I have seen, it was on DVD, not on stage, was Love Never Dies.
Yes.
And that, when I say that musical is trash, I mean that on every single conceivable level.
And if you want to talk again, why musicals never have sequels, there you go.
It's...
I'm not saying that I haven't already written fanfiction sequels to Battle of Hell the musical.
Oh.
I haven't actually, but like, I've
She's not saying that she has either.
But she...
I've thought about about it only because there are a handful of Jim Steinman songs that I was really dying to hear that I didn't get to hear. Now I'm trying to write a story around them in my head.
I like
it. Spare time.
I think it might, by the way, if we're going to take a slight divergence, if I were to fix that, one song I would get rid of, not because it's bad, but In the Land of the Pig, the Butcher is King doesn't fit with the rest of the music. Doesn't fit with the rest of the music.
Well, pop it into the Batman musical once we get that off the ground.
Yeah, I was originally for that.
Please.
As was,
Let's not.
Please.
Wonderful Toys.
Yeah.
Oh
my god, the Catwoman song is really amazing.
I love Memento Mori.
It's called Memento Mori.
And I thought I have another. Fuck, do I have it on my phone?
The Memento Mori is amazing. It has these beats where it's like da 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 da, like these dance beats, and then it has like this sort of dramatic.
I also liked We Aren't the Children That We Were.
I Need All the Love.
Yeah, I Need All the Love. Yeah, that's Memento Mori, but it's like
okay.
There's like, again, it's a Jim Steinman song. There's like movement, so there's like the operatic bits of I Know the Love I Can Get.
I see on here it's 9 minutes long, of course.
Yeah, but it breaks off into these like frantic, frenetic bits where there's like she's clearly meant to be like parkouring around stage or whatever she's doing, like slinking and sneaking.
Not Allowed to Love, We're Still the Children We Once Were.
Not Allowed to Love,
love
is in Bad Hotel, the musical. Well, Still the Children We Once Were is amazing melodramatic.
It really is
ballad with some ridiculous 4-part harmonies. Because that one is the end of the musical and it's like adult Batman and adult Catwoman, and also child Bruce Wayne and child
Selina Kyle.
Yeah, and they're singing about how they've not evolved from where they were. Like they're still holding on to their demons.
It's a dark song.
It's dark and it's beautiful and sad and big. All everything that Jim Steinman is.
Anywho, sequels.
Anywho, so like bonkers sequels is what you're kind of talking
about. Yeah.
I'm looking at the full list, and I'm realizing I saw one of these in theaters.
Well, I didn't put that as a category on here just because this was just a list that I was going from without anyone else's input.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But
so
I'm just...
We had a particular, like...
I did want to talk about...
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
It's just a failure of an Indiana Jones movie, really.
There's a fucking UFO in it!
Interdimensional beings pointed that.
Oh, so sorry. I was also like, I think that's... I mean, I love Cate Blanchett, and I think she does good work in it, but that villain is completely insane.
Oh, I really like her in it, because she's just, like, doing a cartoon, like, Natasha, with her, like, little bob wig and everything.
Okay, so when I did some Wikipedia research earlier, and I, like, fell down a micro hole on that, and apparently she conceived most things you see on screen about that character.
I believe it.
The bob, she said she was inspired by Rosa Klebb from from Russia with Love.
Yeah,
it was...
I can see that.
Mwah!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Shia LaBeouf is sort of a lame second fiddle.
I was at a vague interest in Shia LaBeouf because I did sort of have an affinity for those like shitty Hitchcockian thrillers.
Disturbia.
Yeah, Disturbia and Eagle Eye.
I like Disturbia. I never saw Eagle Eye.
I mean, they're fun.
I like Eagle Eye.
They're like entertaining, if not original, movies.
Right.
Yeah. I want people to make movies like that on a regular basis, and you know, I hope they do. I've talked about having to turn to maybe some Liam Neeson B thrillers to fill the void.
Oh my god, I want to see The Commuter.
No shortage of those.
I do want to see The Commuter too, actually.
Right?
But yeah, I mean, it's just nuts. The need to have him be like the son and like.
Yeah.
It's so many things at once, that movie.
It felt fanficky in a weird way, like it didn't fit. It felt like it was a wild idea that never really gelled. I was happy to see Marion Lockwood again, but.
Ravenwood,
sorry.
It's part of that bringing all the things back in one movie, like bringing all the best hits.
Well, it read more like a reference parade than it did like a full story.
Yeah, and then there's the monkey scene.
The one part I really love, though, is when Harrison Ford has a picture of Sean Connery on his desk, and it's clearly like one of Sean Connery's 8x10 glossies. Like, it's not a picture of Henry Jones Sr., it's just a picture of Sean Connery.
Yeah,
fresh off. Oh, God, I don't.
Or it's like, I feel like Spielberg and Lucas like wrote him a letter and be like, please, won't you be in our movie? And he's just like, thank you for writing to me. Here's an autographed 8x10 headshot. Thank you for being a fan.
Circa, what was that movie he did with Captain Zeta-Jones?
Yes.
Circa Entrapment.
Yeah.
8x10 glossy.
What a weird movie Entrapment is.
It is weird. I was uncomfortable with that romantic pairing.
Me
time.
Too.
Oh, why should
you? I mean... I'm uncomfortable with it now.
Yeah. And that and the termites. Or the
ants.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
The CGI ants that, like, climb and, like, make a tunnel, or they do some sort of, like, ants don't do that.
It also just felt like, in many ways, the magic just was gone in many aspects of Crystal Skull, at least for me.
I have to say, though, for what it's worth, I don't enjoy Crystal Skull. Like, I think it's really mediocre.
Either.
I would still rather watch it than Temple of Doom.
Interesting.
We all know by this point that Temple of Doom is my favorite. About it. We don't have to get into it, guys.
We don't have to get into it. You're right.
We don't have to get into it. She's my favorite character.
Oh, really?
No. Oh, we have had this discussion before. I couldn't with hearing that. I shriveled up and died when you said that to me. Anyway.
What was the one thing I wanted to say about it? Oh, the one thing that I like to get that like Red Alert Media covers very nicely is there's that scene in the movie where he's like, digging a grave or something at night, and
yeah.
He calls up and he's like, don't you teach history or something? And Indiana Jones says, part-time, in the weirdest way, but then they found the trailer, and, like, he says it differently, and it's a much better line.
It's a different take, because
it's like, yeah, part-time, but, like, it's, like, a punchier
weird.
In the movie, the one that you get is this, like,
flat
part-time. It's just like, the dullest... weirdest way of saying that line.
Bizarre.
Did you guys see that the fifth one was pushed back? Its release date was pushed back?
I did.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, what's going to happen in it?
It was pushed from 2019 to 2020, but he's like, Spielberg is saying like, yeah, film's going to start in 2019.
I would be okay if that never happened.
Me too!
Ready for it to be done.
Here's the thing. I like Harrison Ford. I don't know that I buy him in the role at this point anymore.
That in terms of a story point, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is a good place to leave Indy. He's just married Marion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he found his kid.
Mm-hmm.
He can go off and be, like, the father that he never was.
Right.
His adventures are all done. So I don't need a story about Indy being 10, 12 years older than that, doing another adventure.
I am also okay with letting these old things go.
I haven't talked about it on this podcast before, but... if you want to see, like, a treasure hunter-esque, like, story that started and told and ended well...
I do, too.
Uncharted.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to talk about The Librarians.
Oh, I thought that's what it was going to be.
I knew it was going to be Uncharted.
Uncharted 4.
Oh, 50-50, right?
Uncharted 4 gave me so much catharsis.
I mean...
so fucking good.
You know, we were, like, briefly close to getting a David O. Russell movie... adaptation of Uncharted.
I know, everyone has talked for decades and decades about, like, we gotta get Nathan Fillion to play him.
Right.
I get it.
Aged out of
the
role at this point.
He's too old now, for sure. He would have been good.
In his lean days, it would have been perfect, for sure.
He would have been perfect, but I'm so glad that he aged out of it before he could do it, because I'm not a huge Nathan Fillion fan.
Do you know who would be a good indie, though?
Who?
If they did another one, if they wanted to recast indie.
Alden Ehrenreich.
What I was going to say is Carl Urban.
Yeah.
Ooh. I would like that.
I don't know how old he is.
I think Carl Urban is probably in his 40s, but he can play younger, and I think he's really good.
He has, like, a crusty thing that I want.
Some Carl Urban.
I love me some Carl Urban.
Because, like, I'm just worried it's going to be Chris Pratt. You know, like, it's 100% going to be Chris Pratt if they make a new one without Harrison Ford.
Honestly, since I found out that apparently Chris Pratt is, like, a closet Trump supporter, I didn't know
he was Republican. He talks about, like, guns and farming all the time.
Sure, but, I mean, I think there's a line between that and voting for Trump. But that was just sort of like, I'm done. I'm all set.
Anyway, that's my choice. Yeah. Carl Urban for
There's
indie.
Gotta be other
I would support that for sure.
There are too. It's just that he was the one who I can most see encapsulating what I think indie is as a character.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at your list.
Thank you.
Saw The Huntsman Winter's War in theaters.
I know.
It was hot trash.
I believe it. I did not see it in theaters or otherwise.
The Huntsman didn't even...
do well.
Did it perform well enough to
deserve
to see it? It must have financially, right?
It did okay. I don't think it was a smash hit.
Show me the receipts.
God, is that my twin?
Yes. I would rather have seen
If not the receipts, then the credit card you used to purchase the item. I can look it up with that.
Can you please let me know my Hansel and Gretel joke?
What?
I thought I would have preferred to see Hansel and Gretel 2 sandwich.
Hansel and Gretel 2 Rise of the Sandwich.
Do you
remember when we saw that, and they ended in a desert, and I had this moment where I was like, guys, it's a sandwich! And then it ended with a sandwich, and I was so happy.
All right. Well, actually, yeah, to your point, budget was $170 million. Box office came back $396.6 million.
Yeah.
So it did make...
Obviously, like, why else would you make a sequel?
It made boku bucks.
Yeah.
Boku Dolores.
Boku Dolores. But I believe, in this case, the reason why Kristen Stewart didn't come back, I think she fucked the director when he was married, and then shortly thereafter broke up with him. So he was not willing to work with her anymore.
I mean, he didn't do the sequel anyway.
Didn't he?
Pretty sure he didn't.
Oh, let me see.
I don't want to speculate on the personal life of Kay Stu.
I mean, it happened, and then she suddenly wasn't in the sequel.
Did you watch The Huntsman? Have I seen The Huntsman?
I have it.
I don't remember seeing it, but I feel like
it's pretty boring. It's pretty boring. The story's not that good, but...
It looks nice.
It looks nice. It's fun to watch on mute, let me tell you. And
I have seen it. I don't remember a thing about it.
It's very forgettable, although Charlize Theron is great in it. And it feels like when they made Snow, the Winter's War, they're like, okay. And the trailers made it seem like it was going to be her show, but it's not. It's actually a really boring action movie starring, weirdly, Jessica Chastain and Chris Hemsworth.
And Elsa.
And, well, and
Emily Blunt.
Elsa, played by Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Emily, I mean, the whole movie is dumb. It's almost not even worth considering how kind of misogynistic it is, because it seems to be too stupid to know how to do anything right. So to almost zero in on that specifically is unfair.
Well, you had segued to the category that I had written here of The Actors Won't Come Back.
Mm.
And the titles of that I had come up with were, in fact, The Huntsman, Winter's War, Flintstones, and Viva Rock Vegas, in which none of the originals wanted to do it. So they said, fine, we'll make it a prequel and we'll recast everyone. Is Jane Krakowski available to play Betty Rubble? Okay.
I never saw... Wow, really?
I just want to say up top, I haven't seen any of these movies on this list. I will do my best to make some jokes.
I mean, we don't have to actually talk about it, but like Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, where it was just like,
I want
okay,
to know about
we
this
have
one.
Johnny Depp, and
that's
we have
it.
Nothing else. Oh, well, no, they have Barbossa. So they have like...
What was the one before on Stranger Tides?
It was the first three, and then Stranger Tides was four, and the fifth one is...
So in the third one...
Dead Men Tell No Tales.
In the third one, Orlando Bloom becomes the new
Davy Jones basically.
Something.
So Orlando Bloom is not in the fourth one. Keira Knightley's not in the fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bunch of randos whom you don't at all care about. And it has Ian McShane, and he is boring. He's boring.
That's
as fuck.
Shocking.
Like, how could he ever?
I don't
know.
Like, what a clear misfire when you have Ian McShane as Blackbeard in your movie, who has a ship that shoots fire at people,
Jeez.
And he somehow ends up being, like, not at all memorable and very dull.
He's such a
Can
skilled scenery chewer. I'm shocked.
Can I ask, does, in the movie, because I haven't seen anything beyond three.
I haven't either.
Does Johnny Depp's character, what's his name, Captain Jack?
Yeah.
Does he become, like, more... I don't know, heroic? Or, like, less of a...
Grounded?
No,
yeah,
which
more,
is...
More grounded and less of, like, a joke?
More like a human or, like,
kind
a...
kind of the problem with doing a movie where he's the central character, right? Because
yeah.
It's like, you have this goofy side character, and then you're like, oh,
who's
well, he'll
like,
be the center of the
sort
movie.
Sort of like a, just a... More of, like, a...
He's like a...
catalyst for everyone else.
Yeah.
He's like a mascot character more than anything
well,
else,
he, like,
but
he's
I think...
He's in it for himself. He doesn't
yeah.
have any real, you know, like, desires or motivations in terms of the plot.
Yeah.
So it's just... It's better when he's off to the side having his antics or having some impact on the adventure, but not when he's the focus of your story.
Well, he kind of just reacts to things.
Well, it makes
yeah.
you think, too, that that was a very marketing-driven decision, right? Because they're like, oh, this was an extremely popular character. We'll just make him the centerpiece of this
I mean,
movie
I don't
now.
Think,
was it, though? Or was it because no one else could do it? So they were like, I guess we have...
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah. Because I think, like, yeah, it's sort of like when you have a sitcom where the goofy side character is the reason why people tune in.
Well, it's like Family Matters when Urkel
yeah.
became, like, the center of the show.
No,
right.
Like, then it's like it loses the charm.
Right, because it's not, he's not just this thing that pops every now and then and adds some interesting, like, quips to a scene.
Yeah.
He is your entire show.
Well, it's where they zero in on a joke that was good in small doses and then see that it can't be
right,
stretched
like,
out that far.
Oblivion.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we're not having fun anymore.
And
this
then
is bad.
The fifth one's still nonetheless anyway, because it made so much money overseas.
Although I know, because we're making movies for China now. But, I mean, didn't Orlando Bloom appear in the fifth one briefly? I believe he
yeah,
did.
Yeah, Keira Knightley did, too.
Oh, she did, okay.
Yeah.
Was he the guy in the trailer, then? Was he the Davy Jones guy that was like, where is he?
No, that was Javier Bardem.
Oh, okay.
He, like, comes back for a, like, hey there, buddy hug, I think.
I think Orlando Bloom, if I remember correctly, Orlando Bloom has, like, a fair amount to do in the third part of the story. Like, and Keira Knightley literally just shows up at the end and is like, hey, I'm back now, too. Like, just to wrap everything up with a nice little bow.
Is Davy Jones then, as done by, I guess, Orlando Bloom, is, does he become like a sort of benevolent god of death type thing?
Like a psychopomp or something?
I think the idea is that Davy Jones was never supposed to be evil. He's just supposed to be like a ferryman, moving people from one world
like
to the other.
Like Charon.
Escape your fate.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so Davy Jones corrupted that when he became a weird squid pirate who wanted his own crew of dead pirates, I guess. I could not tell you.
I don't know. The mythos is very weird.
Oh, yeah, no, it's confusing and dense and ill-explained.
Well, speaking of ill-explained, I don't think I ever saw Hannibal, but I definitely saw Hannibal Rising.
I'm so sorry that you had to see Hannibal Rising.
It was really bad.
Yeah, because that's what a great workaround when, even Anthony Hopkins is like, I don't really feel like doing this. You're like, fine, well, we'll make a prequel with no one who's ever been in a Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and, you know what, audiences are jonesing for? Young Hannibal, and also for nothing to happen for most of the movie.
Young, sexy
but
Hannibal.
But people like the TV show, don't they?
Yeah,
the TV show was great.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a horse of a different color, right?
Completely. Well, and people are attracted to it because it successfully played up a sexuality that was very interesting, but it was also visually astounding to watch, where it was simultaneously vile, but really beautiful and enticing. In Hannibal Rising, though, it's like Gaspard Ulliel, isn't it what's his name from The Wire?
Oh, fuck me if I know. I remember they eat his sister, and that's how he becomes
a
cannibal.
Yes, well, and his aunt is played by Gong Li, which is really sad. On two levels, because it's the second time Gong Li has been enticed to do an American movie. She's a humongous Chinese star, and they've enticed her over to do two American movies, and they've both been massive flops, and that was this and Memoirs of a Geisha. And it's also unfortunate, too, that it's a Chinese actress who we are positing both times as a Japanese woman.
I never saw Memoirs of a Geisha.
Because Hannibal Rising tries to posit, by the way, that Hannibal is this way because she teaches him the way of the samurai. BT Dubs.
So what is the order of those movies?
It's Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal.
Red Dragon is technically first.
Yes.
It was Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, Red Dragon, Hannibal Rising.
I liked Red Dragon. That was a good one.
Well, I didn't put it on there because Red Dragon is it's a different thing, right? Because the only thing you really need for the book to be adapted into a movie again is Hannibal Lecter. In the book, Hannibal Lecter's barely in it.
Yeah, he's sort of just the advisor, sort of.
I mean, in the book, he's there once. I think he has one scene in the book. And in the movie, they gave him several other scenes where he does the same thing he did in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and that's what they're cashing in on.
So it was released as...
Like a side story.
Hannibal, Red Dragon, and then Hannibal Rising?
But they made it clear in Red Dragon that it's not happening after the events of Hannibal, I don't think.
Yeah, no, Red Dragon is a prequel. It's still a prequel.
I'm just going to say it. I prefer Red Dragon to Silence of the Lambs.
What do we want to talk about next?
Well, we could talk about How Would the Plot Allow for This, which is a sequel where the original one would have been finished in such a way that it could not have possibly allowed for a sequel.
Yeah, you would never let that fucking kid out of your sight.
Ever.
Exactly. And more improbably, how can you have the same adventure in New York that you had previously in your own home?
Oh, my God.
How can you
be
home alone when you're in a city where you do not live?
And here's how we do that. It's where he, goes to stay at the house that he thinks his relatives live at, but they're gone and it's being renovated.
Right. It's
sort of a dark setup there.
Well, I mean, it's just that, they're having their house renovated, so he goes in there, and that's where he booby-traps the titular home.
Right.
In the Home Alone 2 Lost to New York title.
Because those thieves are back. I think
Sticky
one of them,
bandits.
One of them, the Sticky Bandits, I think one of them didn't show up for the third one, or did he?
No one showed up for the third one.
Oh, no one?
No,
interesting.
The third one is an entirely different cast.
I had no idea.
That's why I said I put Home Alone sequels as a list here, because with the second one, you have the premise of, how do we do a sequel to what is essentially a concept comedy?
Right.
The concept being, this kid was left home alone, burglars want to rob the house. How do you recreate that again when the obvious solution is, I don't know, maybe get some sort of security system? So then you say, well, I don't know, we'll go to New York for some reason. He'll be there, his family will be in Florida, and the bandits will be there too. And he'll be in a house that his relatives own, and they'll also try and steal money from a toy store. I don't know, man, it's Christmas, who cares? And then the third one, it's none of them. No, it's not even him. And I think there's a fourth and fifth, and in one of them, it's Kevin McAllister again, but it's . He doesn't have the same number of siblings he wants.
This time, Kevin's a... Or it's this time Kevin's a sticky bandit or something.
Yeah. So it goes from how could you ever make a sequel to this to no one wants to show up for the third time.
What is Alien Resurrection about?
Oh my god.
Resurrection.
They couldn't leave well enough alone.
Right, I've only seen the first Alien movie.
Okay.
Aliens is quite good.
I don't really like Alien. I'm just creepy. I don't want to see it.
The second one is less of a horror. It's more of an action movie.
It is.
All right. I hate all the... I can't stand that shit, okay?
I mean, it's still there, but...
That's why I do not watch more Alien movies.
Mm.
So, Alien Cubed was sort of a compromised sequel in that, you know...
This is the fourth one.
But in the end of Alien Cubed, spoiler alert for a movie that's, like, over 20 years old at this point, Ripley dies.
Okay.
She, like, there is an alien inside of her, and she's like, fuck it, the only way that I'm going to get out of this is if I fall into this lava.
And it's a good, complete story.
Yeah, so it's like her story is ended. She has sacrificed herself to stop this creature from coming back.
There is no plot hook left.
And then in the fourth one, they're like, well, maybe what if we cloned her and we brought her back to life?
It's the most...
Except she's also kind of evil now.
It's the most sort of kind of... I mean, she...
I don't know anything about StarCraft, but isn't that sort of like the thing that happens with Kerrigan?
No, Kerrigan... dies but is resurrected by the Zerg. In this case, by like the evil alien things and becomes one of them and then
this is not the same thing
becomes like that. In this, she does sort of become one of them but through human folly.
She's also the mother of an alien-human hybrid.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an ugly... First of all, like, it's an ugly movie. Visually speaking, it is one of the least appealing movies I have ever seen in my entire life. I will never watch that movie again because I find it so fucking ugly.
It's very unimaginative. The story isn't very good. It's almost like the plot was like, we need to resurrect this character in this franchise, so we'll just make that the central theme of the movie. She is sort of evil, and then you have to watch through so much of the movie of her, like, cooing and stroking this weird abomination, and then...
That's it. I remember the only thing, like, the only scene I fucking really remember in that movie is at the end when Brad Dourif's, like, cocooned in a wall.
Yes!
And he's just like, oh, look at you touch the baby. Oh, look at him.
Yes!
He's, like, fucking narrating the movie to you, the audience.
And he starts kind of yelling it at her, like, touch the baby!
Yeah.
But then she has this realization of, like, baby needs to die.
Yeah.
So she kills baby... And then
she cuts her hand on the baby's teeth.
I'm confused.
She throws her blood against the window because now that she is a part alien clone, she has acidic blood like the aliens in this movie.
Okay.
And so there starts to be like, you know, a breach in the spaceship. The baby alien gets like sucked up against the wall, like this tiny pinpoint hole, and it
gets
like pulled off its face.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's into the vacuum
about
of space.
Who Brad Dourif is and what
is he's like
Brad Dourif is
character who was, you know,
but he's with the evil corporation that keeps coming back in these movies being like, "But what if aliens good?"
So he wants
it's nearly been the premise of every alien sequel
since the only time it was successful is Paul Reiser was great.
So he wants aliens to succeed, I guess.
He's also a lunatic. He's like unstable.
Yeah,
at that point.
But he's saying he wants her to mother the alien.
Yeah.
And then she realizes she has a final moment of lucidity where she's like, "No, I have to kill you.
Yes,
I have to kill baby.
Baby must die." Well. I feel like there's also like the very. I feel like there's a very thin veneer over it too of like, they'll be great super soldiers. Like that's always the way though,
I mean,
isn't
it's
it?
It's always like we're going to monetize the. It's like
somehow
Jurassic World all over again, right? It's like but what if it was a soldier in some way? Despite the fact that, you know, how is that ever a good idea? How does a velociraptor make more sense than a guy with a gun?
You're gonna
shoot the velociraptor and then what?
It's almost as fucking if we haven't learned our lesson at this point. And I guess that's maybe one of the messages of like, we never learn not to tamper with science. Like that's not the problem. We've already seen aliens just like kill people time and again. This wasn't going to work to begin with. Anywho.
Oh
my god. Should we just touch on Superman while we're...
Because I couldn't think of another example for We Have No More Money for this, where Superman 4 clearly has the lowest budget of any of the Superman
movies. It's a strange movie.
The fact they have the money for it, there are just some insane decisions, because isn't Superman 4 the one where they bring back the Amnesia Kiss for like a super...
Yes.
Creeps... McGee scene.
And it was
like,
it was not great.
Sorry, I need to be real with you for a second. So,
I'm going
to
tell you everything.
To very quickly tell you once again that I am Clark Kent and Superman.
Yeah.
And I have a moral quandary. Help me through it. And then I'm going to make you forget all of it.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder with a moment of bleak depression, like how many times has he done this to her?
And to cover up what else?
Yeah.
Like.
Jesus.
Isn't that also the one that Christopher Reeve was directing? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
He directed one of them because he wanted to do an anti-nuke message.
Yeah, no, it was that one then. I'm pretty sure, yeah, because that is the anti-nuke one where he gathers all the nukes and throws them into the sun. And it creates, what's his, like,
Nuclear Man?
Yeah,
I don't remember. But it was supposed to be played by Christopher Reeve also as, like, an evil super, and they're like, hey, we don't have the budget to do the split-screen stuff. We're hiring some other guy to be this character.
That would have been kind of great, though, if he did both.
Yeah.
He could have given us Bizarro.
But it was, like, Lex Luthor that did it, right?
Right, well, and... Shining point of the movie, Lenny Luthor, played by John Cryer.
You are correct.
who's kind of playing gay in it?
I mean, in the sense that, like, he was always playing gay in the 80s.
That's true.
But it's, like, with his, like, super, like, Valley Girl accent. Oh, no.
Yeah, it was...
Uncle Lex.
Oh, no.
As...
This is where I think, like, evil nuclear super is, like, spinning him around or something. And you just hear him go, like,
I love it.
As opposed to, like, my eyes are going to come out of their socket. Please, stop spitting me. He's just like, ew.
This is uncomfortable. Stop it.
Bad in it. It's not even just that they have no money. It's like they have no energy.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure partly reflects the fact that they got, like, no money to do it. They probably got, you know, the minimum that would have convinced them to show up for this movie.
I love Natasha Lyonne's take on it when they did How Did This Get Made, where she was like, people are making such big choices in an otherwise super boring movie. Because it's true. Like, Mariel Hemingway is doing something weird.
She was in that
whole scene where she's on the table. Like, that was all...
I don't remember that so much. I've seen the movie once, and I remember what I remember. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Mostly Lenny Luthor.
Oh, no!
I'm sure there are other examples of movies where they just had no money to pull off the sequel they wanted to pull off. That is the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't think of any others.
Tell that they were not shooting, you know, at the United Nations building. They were shooting at some pavilion in England somewhere.
I wonder.
You know what else, though, we could talk about for sequels with no money for? Mm-hmm. I guess they're, like, all of the shitty Disney sequels.
I was thinking about
direct-to-video.
Like, I wanted to exclude direct-to-video sequels because they are all sold as shameless money grabs. Like, you just can't argue otherwise.
Like, wasn't there Beauty and the Beast or Cinderella Twist in Time?
That's
was one.
Can we all agree that Lion King 2 is all right?
I
never
Lion
saw
King
it.
Lion King 2,
it's
right.
Fine.
I mean, it's basically the Romeo and Juliet to Lion King's Hamlet.
Oh, okay.
Where Simba's daughter
Except
falls in love
with
her son.
Except for that one creepy song where, like, lions are humping each other. It's fine.
In Yupendi.
In Yupendi.
What? There's a
it's
song
not
in
it. Really. But there is, like, a sort of...
It's like a fuck song?
It's a weird, like... Like, love. Like, love is great. All the animals love love.
But
it's just sort of like this
like
it's like a fantasy
energy.
Song. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a fantasy song. It's sort of like the Hakuna Matata of the...
Yeah, because it's the fun number.
Yeah, it's the fun bouncy number, but, like, there's a bit where, like, all the animals are doing conga lines, but, like, in animals, that's what it looks... In animal world, that's what it looks like when
From mounting from behind.
Yes! And so it's really...
Hands on the waist.
They did that as a choice.
Yeah.
I don't mind that concept, by the way. Not of animals fucking for our pleasure. I meant, like, doing a Romeo and Juliet within the Lion King world.
It sort of makes sense as a follow-up, right?
Right.
If you're in a crib from Hamlet the first time, it's like, well, this is a plausible thing. And then when you have Lion King 1.5, you're cribbing from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead.
Yep.
Because it's all about Timon and Pumbaa, like, offering commentary on the first movie.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it wasn't good, though, yes?
I never saw it.
I didn't see that one either.
But I would love to see.
It also has some good songs. It has "He Lives in You," which is a.
I like a lot
he
of the songs. Well, because that was also written, I think, for
the
stage show. Yeah.
Was it in the stage show? Is it actually in the stage show?
Yeah, Mufasa sings it.
Wait, so was this sequel made after the success of the stage show?
I'm sure it was.
Interesting.
He lives in me. Yeah.
It's a song.
It has actually a couple of these. Joss Whedon did the lyrics for
the
villain song. Yeah.
I forget the villain song because
it's called
"My
Lullaby."
Female.
Yeah.
It's Scar's wife.
It's like mistress. Like, they stop short of, like, they
as
really awkwardly.
If he had a wife.
Well, they really awkwardly dance
around.
Well,
he does because he has a kid.
Yeah.
I know, but please.
They awkwardly dance around the fact that, like, is he a negligent father? Was his marriage never consummated to this female lie? Like,
of course
all these
not.
That you have to worry about when you're grafting human traits onto animals. I suppose, like, in the first one, I just remember the scene in the first one where Simba runs into, like, where Mufasa and Sarabi are sleeping, and there's a whole bunch of lionesses lying around them. As a child, I was like, oh, I never thought about this. But as I thought, I'm like, oh, those are Mufasa's other wives.
That's,
like,
his harem.
All the other women that he is fucking.
And the pride of lions of, like, one male.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. And so then when you look, it's like, oh, Nala is Simba's half-sister.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So again, as long as you don't think about these things, it's perfectly
Yeah.
Anyways, the last category I had on there was musicals never have sequels, which we discussed a little bit with Annie 2, Annie Warbucks, and Love Never Dies.
I've...
perhaps the most infamous example of stage show sequels that just refuse to go quietly into the night.
Well, and it just, it only serves to tarnish the success of the original.
Did A.L. write all the songs?
Yes.
He did.
Yes, he sure did.
Yep.
And there were,
he loves money.
And it was workshopped so much that there is no definitive version.
Voice, I'm sure, as well.
Well, he also, like, completely blows up the character of the Phantom. You could argue he was sympathetic in the by the end of the first thing.
No, he's
thing,
not!
But...
He's a fucking lunatic who kills people!
Well,
yes,
I mean,
he's
like
this crazy guy who thinks he's entitled to a woman, like, which again, I know we've talked about this before.
Of course,
we've done musicals. Is how it blows my mind that you would see Phantom of the Opera and be like, oh, I can't believe they didn't get together at the end. He's a lunatic. He's like an 1800s men's rights activist who's like, but I gave her music lessons and I told her she sang really great. Why is she going after this attractive guy? I hold doors open for her all the time.
I mean, I 100% agree. It's mostly him projecting himself on it because. I think Andrew Lloyd Webber had a whole thing for Sarah Brightman. The point is...
they were married. It's not like he was wooing her from afar.
Right, but I guess they at least indicate that by the end of the first one, he's, like, learned a lesson of, like, oops, I made a mistake. In the second one, he's so much, like, he, like, drives Meg to kill herself.
Well, he's a
and,
nice guy trademark in this...
I mean, and how...
And it turns like Raoul is, like, an alcoholic womanizer.
Yeah.
Who was horrible for Christine, and she should have known that he was a horrible choice, and she should have loved the Phantom of the Opera, but also she had gave birth to his son.
Yeah, they fucking retcon a sex scene that happens offstage between Phantom and Christine, and then they reveal in the most awkward way that her... ostensibly her and Raoul's son is actually hers and the Phantom's, and then he sings this song. They sing this song together about their sex, which it makes it sound really rapey and almost like a dirge. It's uncomfortable. But then he's like, hey, listen, if you don't leave Raoul for me, I'm going to kill your son. Our son. I'm going to kill our son. And she's like, you're right. I should be with you.
But she dies in the end, though.
Doesn't she?
Yeah, does she does. Because I think you're confusing something, because Meg Giry shoots her.
That's what it was.
Yeah. And then she's just like, well, I'm dying, so hey, son, the Phantom's your dad. Raoul's not, so I guess if you want to go off with him, go do that.
That's the other thing. He has Meg as a prostitute on Coney Island.
It's just such a dumb... Done.
By the way, this is all on Coney Island, and he goes by Mr. Y.
That's right. Do you get it, Lee? Do you get it, Mr. Y? Think about it for a minute. Mr. Y, visualize it in your head. What could this mean?
Okay, going back to musicals.
Let's talk about Shock Treatment, because that's the only one I've
seen. That's the only one Lee... No, well, I mean, to be fair, I've never seen Stayin' Alive either.
I have.
I've just seen Stayin' Alive. Stayin' Alive just being a very weird sequel to Saturday Night Fever, where
it's basically just a sequel.
Because I've read the I watched the podcast about it.
Yeah.
You watched the podcast about
whatever
it?
Whatever I did.
She did both. She just looked at the MP3 podcast.
Just watched it scroll.
There was a visualization on the media better.
Yeah. The little, like, fireworks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or, like, just flying toasters.
Yeah.
No, so it barely has any relationship to Saturday Night Fever.
Well, it wants to be a dancer, which he never, like, on Broadway, which he never really wanted to do in the first movie.
I've got, like, some dark themes to it.
Because he's in a
In the first one, yes. Because in the first one, a girl gets raped in the back of the car.
Yeah, like, people, for whatever reason, I think, assume that the first one is, like...
fluffy and fun?
Yeah, it's you know...
It is for the...
It's a dancing disco, and parts of it are that.
It is for the first part, and then it takes a really hard left turn where you're like... holy shit, we just went from Friends Saturday Night Out to, like, some really dark stuff.
Yeah.
It basically has no relationship to Stayin' Alive. I think they just wanted... John Travolta, this is his, like, passion movie at the time, and he just wanted to make another disco movie with a lot of Bee Gees music in it, and he got it. Like, there isn't much plot to it. I have a weird history with it where my dad really loves it, so I've seen it at various points in my life. And seeing it when I'm 5, the only scene that I held on to, and this was, I guess, pretty prophetic, is there's a lot of homoerotic moments with John Travolta in it, but most of them is being... having his clothes whipped off on stage by, like, demons in hell, and it's all very, like, leathery and...
Demons in hell?
Oh, yeah. This is
it, like, a fantasy
scene? No, that's the musical that they're putting on.
Yeah, it's called Satan's Alley, where he, like, goes down into hell, but it's, like, an 80s gritty hell.
So there's a musical on, so he wants to be a boss.
He is in this musical as, like, an ensemble member at first, and then he becomes...
like, a lead dancer.
Yeah.
And it's weird... there doesn't appear to be any singing in this musical. It's just dancing. Like, themed dancing. It's bad. It's very bad, but very gay. And I think the fact that I held on to that whipping scene when I was so young was maybe that was like imprinting something on me.
Oh boy.
Grease 2.
Is that the reason you're gay?
It is. Thanks, John Travolta.
Grease 2, though, also has a similar problem where the actors don't come back. They have like Didi Khan and I think the principal.
Yes.
And like her secretary.
Exactly, yeah.
What's Grease 2 about?
It's about Michelle Pfeiffer and Maxwell Caulfield, where Michelle Pfeiffer is like the
greaser.
Danny Zuko type greaser, and Maxwell Caulfield is Olivia Newton-John's cousin.
It's just a gender-flipped version of the other one, and instead of...
So he's a nerd, sort of?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like a soft-spoken...
Instead of cars, it's motorcycles.
Yeah. I have to say, though, in terms of gender dynamics, Grease 2 is a much better movie.
Yes, it is. Okay,
and you say that, I'm like, I'm into it.
Michelle Pfeiffer is a fucking badass in that movie.
She's like a bad girl, and he's just like this quiet, soft, nerdy guy who has to
get her attention to him.
I think you would like it, if only for her scenes. I think she actually does a really good job, and I love Cole Ryder.
Well, it is weird also, though, that for a movie where they're ostensibly the leads, they don't sing that much.
No.
Like, they're in ensemble numbers,
they're not much as singers.
Is it just a sequel in name only?
I mean, it's set at the same high school, right?
Okay, so
There was a plan for it to be, I think, an ongoing, like, sort of almost an anthology thing.
It was initially going to be a direct sequel, and then, like, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John were like, no, we won't be doing this. And so they were like, fine, well, we'll tell another sequel, like, a story at the same high school, and some of the teachers will be there. And also, Didi Khan, who was one of, like, the girls in the first one, will pop up every now and then.
Although
she's luck along the way.
She's gone by the middle of the movie. It completely forgets her, which is weird. But it's also, it is a musical that has more or less the same, ooh, naughty sexual innuendo song 3 times. And all 3 times it's insufferable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. So then also Shock Treatment, which we had talked about because Lee, it's the only one of those that you have actually seen. Shock Treatment.
Prefer it.
You prefer it to Rocky Horror?
And why don't we like Rocky Horror?
It's all about sex positivity. And I don't like sex. Not that I'm saying it's, you can have it, right?
Sure.
There's just nothing there.
No, so like, Lee, like, what would she really get out of Rocky Horror, is what I'm saying. Like, why would Lee want to go see it?
That's
I'm
a good point.
I'm uncomfortable, like, I am prudish, and I don't want to be forced to partake in any sort of, like,
audience
let's all take our clothes off and, like, act nuts. I'm fine with that, and I do not want to be forced into it. So,
sure.
Like, if I am Janet or whoever is in that, I'm deeply uncomfortable with everything that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that makes sense why you would prefer Shock Treatment.
Yeah, Shock Treatment, which also similarly started off as being a direct sequel to Rocky Horror and then kept molting and molting until it became almost unrelated entirely in that it has Brad and Janet, but they might as well be different characters.
They basically are.
Like alternate dimensions version of, like, Brad and Janet.
Right.
Or like fanfic almost.
Well, it's because, like, they don't explain, like, it just starts off with Janet being like, we have such problems in our relationship. Like, what are these problems? Where do they stem from? Why are you having them? I don't know. No one cares. No one knows. Who bothers? And so, like, it has actors from the first movie playing different characters, too. So you have, like, Richard O'Brien.
Wasn't he involved in making it? I mean, like,
yeah,
wasn't
he... He did the songs. Like, Rocky Horror Pictures... Like,
I feel like I read somewhere he, like,
musical.
Directed or something.
I like the ending song a lot.
Let me see.
Oh, Anyhow.
Yeah.
I love Anyhow.
To be fair, a lot of the songs are really solid, which I think helps a lot. If you're going to watch, like, a not-so-great musical, it really helps if you have songs that are very enjoyable.
I think Shock Treatment's a really solid movie.
Well, so, if I remember correctly, the plot is basically that they get stuck in a, like, sort of, like...
A TV studio.
Yes!
That it looks like a giant TV, if I'm correct?
Well,
yes.
Like the town lives there basically.
Yeah.
Like everyone goes into the TV studio in the morning and sometimes they spend the night there too. It's just in a weird way it became really prescient about like celebrity culture
yes.
and
yeah,
like reality
everyone,
TV.
15 minutes
Janet
of fame.
Into it and
right.
She sort of gets her own like celebrity show.
Right, like everyone's obsessed with Janet when Janet's doing so Janet stops caring about everything else and like everything is filmed as a TV show that the audience is watching.
Yeah.
And so like there are problems in it,
there.
But there are a lot of really weird decisions that paid off at the end.
Richard O'Brien was one of the writers of the script.
The end,
I'm
sort
sure
of
he
like,
was. Chris, you don't have to tell me what Richard O'Brien
Oh, no, I just mean that's what I was remembering.
What were you saying?
There's the end is sort of like they escape it,
right?
Like
yeah. Like the rest
characters.
Of the town is just there, like, hooray, TV's all! And like the good guys are all like, fuck it, we're
leaving.
Yeah,
they strike on the road and they'll get in the car and they drive off in the sunset.
I agree that I kind of want to rewatch this movie now. I just
I
remember it.
I think, frankly, it's probably worth an episode.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's watch. In my memory, it's watchably demented. I think it's fun. I think the jokes it's telling actually kind of have a little bite to them.
Actually, guys, you heard it here first. I'm bumping 9 from the schedule. We're going to Shock Treatment instead.
I'd be okay with that, but I do want to do 9 eventually.
All right.
I haven't seen 9 yet. But I remember you showing me Shock Treatment ages ago, and I was so reluctant because I just knew that it was a sequel to Rocky Horror, and I was like, well, this is better.
Yeah, it has, like we said, almost nothing to do with the original movie. So if you've never seen Rocky Horror, you can watch this one and you will not have lost anything.
Yeah.
And I think at some point it was done in London as a stage show, but they changed a lot, like eliminated some characters and shit like
Interesting.
That. I really would like at some point if someone were to try making this into a musical. Like, it'll never play
Broadway. A revival?
Yeah, but I would just like someone to try and adapt it so that it can be done for regional performances and shit like
that. That'd be fun.
That'd be pretty fun.
I'd be into that. I think you could keep the whole, all of the songs, probably.
Oh, no, I think you could, too. I think there's a, like I said, there's a lot there that's pretty good and that works pretty well. The last thing I had on here to throw real quick was a musical sequel that never happened, Hairspray 2 White Lipstick.
I can't believe it was called White Lipstick.
They had written a script, apparently, and they had done some demos, is what I had heard.
Yes, so I was there for a...
White Lipstick!
That was the opening song.
Yeah.
So, yeah...
By Shmilly Shmeidel.
I can't really tell what it's about, except that it had to do with more of the 60s, so it was dealing with, like, other things that were happening in the 60s at that point.
So, like, so, Burning Man?
Yeah, it was all about Burning Man.
The cast of Hairspray goes to Burning Man.
Hold on. Oof. I would watch that movie, and so would we all.
And there was going to be a thing where, like, Link was trying to be, like, a Beatles-type singer, so he had a mop top and was talking with a fake British accent.
Doesn't work.
No, I mean, it's all, to be fair, everything I see about this is completely ludicrous, and it sounds ridiculous, but on the other hand, it's a John Waters movie musical, so I can't help but feel like maybe it could have worked.
Was he ever involved in the making of it? White Lipstick, I mean.
I think he had something to do with the script.
Okay.
I think he might have had more to do with that than he did with the musical Hairspray, frankly.
I see.
He basically just, like, gave his blessing to them and said, sure.
Do whatever you want.
And I think he was, like, a consultant role, sort of, but he didn't really do anything for the musical.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it'll never, ever happen, the sequel to Hairspray. So, as you're drifting to sleep tonight, imagine what you think it might have been like to see Hairspray 2 White Lipstick in theaters.
So, guys, this is super helpful, I'm sure, but on the Hairspray Wiki, they cover Hairspray 2 White Lipstick, in which... John Waters talks about writing the script and selling it, but he was like, but you know, the original is still the gift that keeps on giving. That's such a sweet sentiment.
I mean, I'm sure
in the face of defeat.
Well, because the original continues to make a lot of money.
A lot of money.
So, yes, indeed it is. Guys, these are some shameless sequels we've talked about tonight, and that's about all we got for tonight. We're going to go look at some tickets from Moulin Rouge, and we'll see you guys then.
Woo!
Bye! Bye.